This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. And Amy off to a bit of a slow start today, but she will be joining us. Yesterday, President Trump delivering a national address via video. The headlines were Trump finally concedes. Actually, the day before, in a statement that was released by Dan Scavino, one of his comms people, he ensured a smooth transition of power. Well, he reiterated that yesterday in his video, President Trump saying the following.
I would like to begin by addressing the heinous attack on the United States Capitol. Like all Americans, I am outraged by the violence, lawlessness, and mayhem. I immediately deployed the National Guard and federal law enforcement to secure the building and expel the intruders. America is and must always be a nation of law and order. The demonstrators who infiltrated the Capitol have defiled the seat of American democracy. To those who engaged in the acts of violence and destruction, you do not represent our country. And to those who broke the law, you will pay. We have just been through an intense election and emotions are high. But now tempers must be cooled and calm restored. We must get on with the business of America. A new administration will be inaugurated on January 20th. My focus now turns to ensuring a smooth, orderly, and seamless transition of power. This moment calls for healing and reconciliation.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line. Well, this moment, according to Nancy Pelosi, according to Pagliacci over in the Senate, according to Illinois Congressman Adam Kinzinger, calls for President Trump to resign or be impeached or be taken out via a 25th Amendment action. So should Trump just walk amid an increasing number of resignations, more yesterday, including Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, and she took President Trump to task for his rhetoric, sort of falling in line on the idea that Trump's rhetoric was the inflection point for the violence that occurred on Wednesday. Here's what Illinois Republican Adam Kinzinger posted, essentially suggesting that the captain of the state right now is Captain Queeg, and he needs to be removed. Either stairs or window.
Sadly, yesterday, it became evident that not only has the president abdicated his duty to protect the American people and the people's house, he invoked and inflamed passions that only gave fuel to the insurrection that we saw here. When pressed to move and denounce the violence, he barely did so, while of course victimizing himself and seeming to give a wink and a nod to those doing it. All indications are that the president has become unmoored, not just from his duty, nor even his oath, but from reality itself. It is for this reason that I call for the vice president and members of the cabinet to ensure the next few weeks are safe for the American people, and that we have a sane captain of the ship. Section 4 of the 25th Amendment allows a majority of the cabinet and the vice president to assume the duties of the office of presidency until the president is able to himself. It's time to invoke the 25th Amendment and to end this nightmare. We will arise from this, but we cannot forget what led us here. The liars and conspiracy authors are already at it again this morning with false narratives about yesterday's disaster. Here's the truth. The president caused this. The president is unfit, and the president is unwell. And the president must now relinquish control of the executive branch voluntarily or involuntarily.
The president caused the violence that occurred on Wednesday. He is unfit. He is unwell. He must be removed, again, stairs or window. 312-642-5600, turnkey.proanswerline, 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line. Do you agree with Nancy Pelosi, Pagliacci, and Republican, Illinois Republican Congressman Adam Kinzinger? Philip in Bensonville, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning, Dan. How you doing, sir?
Good.
Dan, good. Hey, Dan, I just wanted to say something to all these people that follow these politicians. You all follow these cowardly politicians who done nothing for us, who have let our cities burn, did not say one word. Just because a handful of people out of 100,000 people acted a fool, this is what they doing to this man who has done nothing but his job. I have so much to say, just like this COVID. They letting people run around here scared and fear. Look at our children, our old people, people wearing masks, not happy. You can't see nothing but people eyes, people not smiling. All these politicians from Lightfoot to the top, Democrats, the ones who are not supporting Donald Trump, and he's not a God or Messiah. He's just a human being doing his job, are evil. The Obamas, all these athletes, Twitter won't let this man word get out. Damn, people don't know because they're so uneducated. It is heartbreaking to see what the media and people will not let people see. Joe Biden is not, he's the president. I could go with that if it was fair. This election was stolen with all the proof. Nobody wants to see it. It is heartbreaking, but I will not keep the fight going, Dan, but what they have done to this election, everybody see, is the most despicablest thing. And what they're doing to humans with this Cuomo, with these shutdowns, they're evil people, all of them. And people support them. And that's all I have to say, Dan.
Thanks for the call, Philip. I appreciate it. Bill and Glen Ellen.
Yeah, what they plan on doing is destroying Trump. They want to take away his Secret Service protection. If they remove him from office, they'll strip his Secret Service protection, his pension. Then they'll use the Southern District of New York to destroy him and his children. The Democrat Party has turned a corner on evil that we haven't seen in this country since the Civil War. You know, and I just want to know, how do we begin to take this fight back to them when we have a Republican Party? I mean, the Republicans in his own administration are leaving him. And if they think that Republicans are going to be voted for based on that kind of those acts of cowardice, how do we turn the Republican Party around? Because obviously starting a third party isn't going to work. Dan, what do we do to take this country back? I know it's going to be probably a 100-year slog to get there. Where do we start?
That's a big question. Thanks for the call, Bill. I mean, you know, I think when you think about things globally, meaning federally, they become daunting, sort of overwhelming. When you think about things locally, I think they're more manageable. So, I mean, all the conversations we've had, particularly in the context of COVID now with the irrational, ascientific policies surrounding school closures, for example, think about the impact you could have if you were a school board member or if you had organized a platoon of democracy locally with respect to schools to hold those school board members, administrators, teachers' union accountable. Municipal government, state legislative races, which I spent, the better part of 20 years trying to affect in Illinois. I know we don't exactly have a lot to show for it, to my ever-loving frustration. And some places are going to have to be abandoned and conceded as lost, at least for the near term, and spend time where you can have the most positive impact. But I think you have to, sort of start from family and community and local government and build out from there. Rather than trying to build down from the federal government to the locality, I think you start in your household, in your community organizations, in your local government, and you build out from there. And you choose whatever civic institutions or local governmental bodies that are most of interest to you. I don't know. I mean, that's about the best advice I could give, because I don't think there's sort of, if everybody does this one thing, then other than sort of that general engagement wherever you're most motivated, I don't think there's a single thing that's going to bring everybody together and sort of change the larger political, socio-political culture in this country overnight. And also, just sort of a simple ethos of standing up when you should stand up, even if there is consequence to it. And that also means doing a little self-policing, too. I mean, one of the reasons you have no Illinois Republican Party is a political party, or it was a political party that refused to be accountable to itself, whose members did not hold it accountable to the standard that it projected out to the public. And so it collapsed in on itself like a dying star. So, I mean, think about that. Think about where you engage and what you project in terms of who you are, and then do you live up to it, and do you demand that others in your alliance live up to it? It's a thought. Rick and Valpo.
Thanks for taking my call. I want to first say I am in no way, shape, or form condoning the actions of the Capitol building. Disgusted by that, as I am by what went on in Kenosha and Portland and Seattle and Chicago.
Well, that certainly distinguishes you from so many on the left. Yeah, that consistency.
Thank you very much. But what I want to say is I'm truly disgusted by Republicans who have joined Democrats and the mainstream media in condemning Donald Trump. How possibly could those folks expect 75 million plus people to want to follow them in 2022 or 2024? I am not one of those Trump supporters who, I wish he had a filter. I wish he had not said some of the ignorant things that he said. But I'm a Republican, and he's my president. And if I can jump ship when the fire gets a little hot, then what good am I to the Republican Party? I'm embarrassed and ashamed. And Adam Kinzinger can go to hell.
Thanks for the call, Rick. Keith in Kankakee.
Yeah, Adam Kinzinger. I wanted to call him out on the radio. I volunteered for his campaign back in 2010. You know, he got swept in with the Tea Party. And, you know, I gave him money. I walked him praise for this guy and told him straight to his face, do not become, you know, the establishment. Well, he left my district, primaried a guy in a different district, and he's a complete swamp dweller. And if that's our representation in Illinois, we're not going to change anything in Illinois, not at the state level.
Thanks for the call, Keith. We'll pick up this conversation, take more of your calls, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. Coming up, Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. When you've got questions, he always has an answer. It's Sean Hannity, this afternoon at 2 on AM560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and before the Mike Scott newscast, we were talking about both what President Trump had to say in the video he posted yesterday to serve as a national address on the topic, condemning the violence in more specific language, more forceful language than he did on Wednesday, but recommitting his condemnation as well as recommitting to a smooth transition of power. That none, of course, with the frenzy and fever in the swamp that did nothing to stem the tide of those usual suspects calling for him to resign or be impeached or be removed through some 25th Amendment action. And it included Illinois Republican Congressman Adam Kinzinger, who reportedly has gubernatorial ambitions in Illinois in 2022. So I wanted to get your reaction to whether or not Trump should take a walk. I will tell you, with respect to those who want to impeach and who have wanted to impeach since January 20th of 2017, I will say the same thing I said with respect to the impeachment that occurred per the call with Ukrainian President Zelensky. Do it. Go ahead. Adam Kinzinger, you want to impeach? Whip your caucus and join with Pelosi and join with Schumer and ratchet up the rhetoric and spend the next 13 days trying to, or whatever it is now, 12 days, try to get President Trump out of office before he voluntarily leaves office. Go ahead and do it. Do it every day in every way. And what do you think that will accomplish exactly? You think that's the path to healing and reconciliation, do you? Those words that politicians use that used to have meaning. Well, they still do have meaning. They just don't have meaning in a political context. They're just words that politicians use, including President Trump yesterday using those words. Healing and reconciliation. So that when that action leads to an impeachment, a 25th Amendment action, which doesn't really seem to be gaining much traction, or President Trump, which I also don't think is gaining much traction, throwing up his hands and walking, just as people predicted he would do almost since January 20th, 2017 as well. Turns out he had a little bit more stick-to-itiveness than people estimated. But when that sort of action, and just even the statement that Kinzinger made yesterday, when that further frays the social fabric, when that further divides the Republican Party, then we'll use your standard to hold you accountable for the results of the position you took. Because isn't that what you're suggesting President should be visited upon President Trump? He should be responsible for what anybody does because he believes the election was stolen and he spent the last 8 weeks making his case. So because he believes that and you don't believe that, then anything somebody does under the belief that President Trump was won the election and it was stolen from him, President Trump is responsible for. That's the standard. We're going to hold people accountable in positions of power who take positions that you disagree with and whose supporters take those positions and do something criminal. That's really the standard you want to set. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Also, we talked to some people already and got comments from people who were actually on site on Wednesday at the mall or on the steps of the Capitol. And take calls there, too. Any first-person accounts of what occurred Wednesday, what you saw, want to hear from you. Bob and Waukegan, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, in a very small way, I'm a little bit glad that the mostly peaceful protest at the mall what happened when they broke into where Congress and the Senate were in session, because there's no mirror that politicians look at themselves in after stuff like this happens, but they got to feel what the rest of America feels when Black Lives Matter and all the protests went on before in other people's houses. I know we call Washington, D.C. and the places there the people's house, but it's not the people's house because the politicians who run America do not care about the people anymore. Dennis Prager had a really good illustration on a show yesterday. He talked about conservatives being in a pressure cooker without any means of letting off steam. We're kept down by the left in every situation in America. Google will not print stuff from conservatives, Facebook, Twitter, Hollywood, academia. You can't open your mouth in a college class if you're a conservative and vent your views. So what happened in the Capitol yesterday or the day before, I can't even remember what day it is, was an illustration of the pressure cooker losing some pressure. And now the Democrats will use a few thugs in a crowd of 100,000 people to paint with the smallest paintbrush that you could ever hold in your hand. They will use that paintbrush to wash over the entire 74 million people who voted for Trump.
Thanks for the call, Bob. And so here's the thing about that. You not condoning violence, understanding the basis for it. And it's the same thing, frankly, that same conversation we had, same thing we attempted to do with respect to the rioting that went on throughout America in response to police-involved shootings, in response to just general race-based grievances over the summer months and previously. Let's get to the genesis of the Black Lives Matter movement. Let's get to the perceptions that so many Black Americans have about police in this country, and then let's talk about what the actuality is. Let's have a discussion about that. So it wasn't dismissing grievances, race-based grievances. It was explaining them, challenging some of the premises, challenging the evidence, and having a conversation about it. It's the same thing here. I suppose the difference here is that Trump supporters and the tens of, I don't even know what the count was, hundreds of thousands of people who were there on Wednesday, they don't take the position of condoning the violence. There's no, you know, sort of MAGA version of BLM where MAGA issues these middling statements or appeasement statements of appeasement, redefining violence or redefining looting as Nicole Hannah Jones redefined looting to be symbolic taking. 1619 Project. There's nobody running cover and saying that wasn't violence, that was appropriate, and trying to use the redefinition of words as the cover. No, we're saying exactly what Bob said. There was a handful of thugs. Some were Trump supporters. Some clearly were Antifa sort of infiltrators who were there for the purposes of agitating. But there's nobody coming over the top and saying what those people who stormed the Capitol did, who broke in, vandalized things, engaged in confrontations with police. I don't hear any rationalizations for it. I hear a description of where this is coming from and what that small cadre of people on site did is an inappropriate way to address those frustrations. That's what I hear. And that's certainly my view. Mary on the South Side, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, Dan. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I was there on Wednesday also. And I took lots of pictures of people there, and they were all sorts of different people. There was, you know, families of every color. There were obviously gay people, and they were all smiling, wonderful people. There was a guy with tattoos all over his head and neck and gauges in his ears, which I normally find repulsive, but he
you
was
can continue
really
to find it repulsive. That's fine.
Yeah, okay. But he was really sweet. And you know, there were people from Canada, from California, from every state. You know, we were talking to people and everybody was friendly and sweet. We saw people we you know, after the whole morning program, we marched with these people to the Capitol. It was a sea of people as far as you could see. And there were people up on statues with, you know, bullhorns, or some of them had microphones that, you know, were, in, you know, egging people on. There was a guy dressed sort of like Uncle Sam directing people to go single file around the left side of the building. So to get them around the front to the steps where people did end up going in. We never went on that side, but we just, people were singing, chanting, smiling at each other, you know, waving flags. That was it. This was not, you know, they were energetic, but they were such positive, wonderful people.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, look, I went to the rally and where did I go? Kenosha? I can't remember. But before the election, I went to one of his rallies in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
I don't even remember.
Yeah.
And I mean, and I would describe the atmosphere exactly like that. There's 20,000 Trump supporters there and without incident. And it was all very collegial and cordial. And that was the case with, invariably with his rallies, generally speaking. If there had been sort of systemic violence at Trump gatherings, then of course we would never hear the end of it, which is, and so the fact that we never heard anything speaks to that. But I wonder, Mary, if you've been fired from your job yet, like Libby Andrews, this real estate agent at Properties, at Properties.
Well, I will tell you, Dan, that my entire industry has been shut down since March. So I have had only maybe 5% of the work I normally have in a year.
Sorry to hear that.
So, there you go. I mean, you know, unfortunately, my industry bought into this whole scam, hook, line, and sinker, and I don't see how it comes back. You know, so it's no longer worth staying around this great, world-class city. So I am really, my resolve, like, in the car, the way I'm going, okay, first thing tomorrow, I'm going to start packing my things and I'm moving to Florida, you know, something like that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call,
anyway,
Mary.
I wanted to say, wait.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Because the Trump supporters were so nice, we could spot some suspicious looking characters right away. Like, I will say that there were some, like, four guys who, like, cut across in line, you know, and then came back the other way. Like, they were scouting up front where the stage was and then came back. So I don't know what their deal was. But when we were waiting in front of the Capitol, there were four people who went past us, you know, just single file, just determined looking. Two of them had those weird gas mask looking things on, you know, with the canister masks.
Yeah.
And I pointed at him and said, those are Antifa. Those are Antifa. And they did not react. You know,
interesting.
If they'd been Trump supporters, they would have turned around and laughed and said, nah, we're not. You know what I mean? But they're not normal people. They're cold, soulless people. So I called them out and they didn't react, which just proved to me who they were. And one more thing before we hang up. Make sure you call your representative. It's totally off topic, but HB 163 is going to gut the police, and maybe you'll talk about that later in the show. But
yeah, we will get to that.
Thank you so much, Dan.
Thanks, okay. Mary. Well, and again, I know the DC press corps is demanding that these were all Trump supporters committing the violence. You're not allowed to suggest that there were Antifa infiltrators. Despite the fact that Paul Sperry, RealClearInvestigations.com, as I mentioned yesterday, talked to an FBI contact of his and said there was a bus of Antifa, at least one bus of Antifa types that were dropped off there. A face recognition company, Washington Times, reporting that identified at least two members of Antifa Philadelphia that were on site. You hear Mary's first-person account, potentially the identification of more. You're not allowed to say these things. And just as an aside, Mike Scott had this at the top of the hour in his newscast. This is sort of a remarkable precedent, too. This Chicago real estate agent, Libby McCartney Andrews, who's part of the At Properties group, fired for attending the rally. She attended the rally. She didn't do anything wrong. She hadn't been arrested. She posted a picture of herself on social media where she was on the steps of the Capitol. And she says she didn't do anything wrong. Again, she hasn't been arrested or anything. And At Properties fired her, saying that At Properties doesn't condone violence, destruction, or illegal activities. Well, what indication do you have that Libby Andrews condones any of those things? Particularly since there's no evidence she engaged in any of those things. I'd say again, corporate America is to the left of the lefts in government, at least in terms of their conduct. Corporate America has a quicker trigger than government. Corporate America also has more latitude as private enterprise than government in some respects, in some areas. But it's just remarkable to me that you have so many companies, perhaps all of the major companies in the country, who are to the left of Francis Fox Piven, and we don't spend near enough time. We spend some time on this show pointing that out because there's some real implications to it, and Libby Andrews is another casualty of it. I wonder how many real estate agents at properties will take their book of business elsewhere in protest over the Libby Andrews firing. I mean, part of this is, what's the reaction to At Properties for this? Anything? Are you going to use an agent from At Properties the next time you have a real estate transaction? Are you going to do anything to stand with Libby Andrews? Some fodder, some grist for the mill, as it were. Bill in LaSalle County. Hey, Bill.
And most of the time, you know, we voted for Adam during the Tea Party Revolution because he was running against the Chicago and Madigan-based or backed Democrat from Joliet. He has never supported President Trump. Yes, he's a hero for his service for the country, hero for saving that woman's life in Milwaukee. But right now, all Adam is doing is protecting his political life because he knows Illinois is losing a congressional seat. And his district, which is predominantly rural with a couple urban areas, he's lost his full support there. And he has no chance to win the governor's race because he will not get any support from his former base. So I wish him luck, but you know what? He'll be turning to a Democrat before the next primary.
Thanks for the call, Bill. By the way, I don't know if I mentioned it. We did invite Adam Kinzinger to come on the show to talk about the statement he made yesterday. We have not heard back on the topic. He used to come on the show semi-regularly. We talk. I don't know if he wants to talk anymore. Sometimes it seems like when a Republican or anybody, frankly, doesn't agree, doesn't have the same position as, say, I do, they won't come on the show to talk about it, which says a lot about them. And frankly, I think it says a lot about me that I want to come on the them to come on the show and talk about it. I'll have anybody on this show as long as you can have some constructive dialogue. Alvin on in Rockford.
Morning, Dan. You know, what transpired on Wednesday, I don't think you can compare to what happened in the last 4 years. President Trump has made this country energy independent, where we don't have to depend on buying oil from Saudi Arabia or Iran. He's secured our southern border, and eliminated a lot of regulations that make it possible for just the average person to participate in the economy. And he's been the strongest supporter of the rights of the unborn. You know, I think when you look at everything that the president has done, he's been a blessing from God Almighty. And he's done that under the weight of false accusations, all these things that the left has executed against him. You know, I just think that Americans have misplaced their faith in government. And, you know, just I think it should be in God Almighty, and that's where we fail.
Thanks for the call, Alvin. Sorry, we're up against the clock, but appreciate the call.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and President Trump issuing a video statement to the nation yesterday, ensuring a smooth transition of power, condemning the violence that occurred on Wednesday, and saying that the journey that was started in 2016 will continue.
We must revitalize the sacred bonds of love and loyalty that bind us together as one national family. To the citizens of our country, serving as your president has been the honor of my lifetime. And to all of my wonderful supporters, I know you are disappointed, but I also want you to know that our incredible journey is only just beginning.
And Anderson Cooper, CNN's Anderson Cooper, Gloria Vanderbilt's kid.
Oh, yeah. That
the giggler.
Well, though he does shots, you know, and he laughs like the Joker.
He had this to say about all of those Trump supporters who showed up to the Save America rally on Wednesday. Take a listen.
Completely against law and order, completely unconstitutional behavior. It's stunning, and they're going to go back, you know, to the Olive Garden and to the Holiday Inn that they're staying at and the Garden Marriott, and they're going to have some drinks, and they're going to talk about the great day that they had in Washington, and they really did something and stand up for something, and they stood up for nothing other than mayhem and a man who is, you know, in the despicable waning days of...
What elitism. Seriously? They're going to go back to their Olive Garden and the Holiday Inn jobs that they have? That is
not
why
jobs. They're going to go back to the Olive Garden. They're going to go back to Holiday Inn, the Garden Marriott.
Excuse me.
First of all, there's nothing wrong with the Olive Garden, the Holiday Inn, or the Garden Marriott, number one. Number two, Anderson Cooper's a little bitch.
You got that right, brother.
And and I just want to make sure people hear that. Because
I want to play it again.
Because this is, I mean, that is a cut for Anderson Cooper. You are beneath Anderson Cooper.
Yeah.
If you enjoy, and don't fill up on the bread at Olive Garden. You're beneath him.
I like the salad.
And that will persist in perpetuity with your betters in public office, in all the elite, the quote-unquote elite institutions. They're elite. Institutionally, they're not operated by people who are elite in anything.
But that's why people felt disenfranchised in the first place, Dan. Comments like that.
Exactly. There's nothing that has been learned. There is no lesson that has been taken away over the last 4 years by individuals like Anderson Cooper, other than to say, you know, we got caught a little asleep at the switch. We let these... Olive Garden types take over the country. You know, that's our bad. But then we the great reset at the domestic level. We now everything is back to normal, and that's exactly their posture. Take that little slight and everything that it implies to heart, please.
I'll never forget.
And then tell me again about how this is a time for healing and reconciliation when you hear that. From the same CNN bots, from the same Democrat socialist hacks in all of the various institutions they exist.
We got to play it again.
Completely against law and order, completely unconstitutional behavior. It's stunning, and they're going to go back, you know, to the Olive Garden and to the Holiday Inn that they're staying at and the Garden Marriott, and... They're going to have some drinks. They're going to talk about the great day that they had in Washington, and they really did something and stand up for something.
That's sickening. We're beneath him.
Speaking of CNN. Yeah. Yeah.
That's his laugh.
It's infectious. Yeah. Really. It's a good old time. But speaking of CNN. Just a bit of a quick flashback. Mm-hmm. Again, one of the things we pride ourselves on, institutional memory. Fredo Cuomo this summer, when the subject was Black Lives Matter protesters. Remember this? Instant classic.
See the protests as the problem. No, the problem is what forced your fellow citizens to take to the streets. Persistent and poisonous inequities and injustice. And please... Show me where it says that protests are supposed to be polite and peaceful.
Show me where protesters are supposed to be polite and peaceful. I'll show you where they're supposed to be peaceful, Fredo. It's right there in state and federal criminal codes. But that was the attitude of the intelligentsia over at CNN. Over the summer, when siege was being laid on America's cities.
Yeah, and 19 people died, and $2 billion in property damage happened. And you had political leaders like Kamala Harris and others, Maxine Waters, egging this on. And saying it's not going to stop and it shouldn't stop.
This is not whataboutism either, before I get that charge from some Vichy Republican or left-wing hack. This is to say, what I want to say, what is the standard? And is the standard being applied, what's the word the left likes to use? Oh yeah, Fredo just used it, with equity. Because it is being applied by conservatives like us consistently. The violence that occurred on Wednesday was not defensible. The violence that occurred in America's streets, the looting, the rioting, not defensible. Because, as I said and will restate, said yesterday and will restate, in this country and in a free society, legitimate protest ends at the level of civil disobedience. Civil disobedience, not violence. There's a progression, you know. You people have get besieged by emails, the American Revolution, and so forth. Stop. There's a progression to something like a revolutionary movement. It doesn't just turn on a dime. And by the way, it doesn't involve stealing shoes or taking selfies at Nancy, sitting on Nancy Pelosi's chair, office chair. Okay, so don't give me this American Revolution stuff. For those. Some of those on the margins that I've heard from, please.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
Ralph and Rantoul, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Well, good morning.
Ralph, hold on a second. That's so annoying.
No.
Ralph, call back and we'll put you on the non-Munchkin line. All right. Bob and Oswego, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning, guys. How are you?
Good.
Hey, I am so frustrated with the media. You know, we all have been for all these years. But I think once Trump's gone, I think we all really need to start focusing on the media. And maybe we need to start camping outside their houses and camping outside the offices of CNN and making them feel the pressure until they start speaking the truth to the American people.
Yeah, they've been campaigning against Trump for 4 years now.
Thanks, Bob.
And I saw the best sign, Dan, when I was in Florida. It said, you know, did not defund police, defund the media. And well, don't pay, you know, if they're advertising on CBS, NBC, don't use that person.
Well, the other thing, by the way, I mean, in terms of defunding the media, that's coming as the cable bundle unravels.
Oh, yeah.
And it's coming for Fox News, too, I will tell you. Cornell and Villa Park.
Yes, good morning. How you guys doing?
Morning.
Amen to the co-host there about Kamala Harris. She was egging it on, and that is correct. But I wanted to say something very quickly about how this election protest fraud thing is being handled. It's not something that I'm hearing that's being mentioned hardly at all. I think that the conservatives and the Republicans are missing a golden opportunity here. They need somehow, some way, the other parties that also ran for president, because there were a lot of them, even though they weren't on the ballot in each state, they should be incorporated in this fight. I'm very curious to know what type of protests did those parties put up, because we have to get this off of the field of red versus blue and put it to make it more general for other parties to be involved. That's all. Thank you.
That's an interesting point. Thanks for the call, Cornell. That really is an interesting point, because if you remember 4 years ago, I mean, Jill Stein, the Green Party, lodged some objections to the administration of the election. This time around, Joe Jorgensen, and you're right, Joe Jorgensen, the Libertarian candidate, you know, arguably, and I think you have to dig into numbers a little bit, but in terms of the vote totals racked up by the Libertarian candidate, you know, arguably could have made a difference in the outcome of the election. But I haven't heard anything from libertarians, and I read Reason Magazine pretty religiously. And really, generally speaking, the libertarians over there, Nick Gillespie and the crew, have been sort of dismissive of some of the fraud challenges. That's somewhat surprisingly so, knowing their healthy distrust of the competence of government generally to administer things. But here they're not particularly big Trump fans for a lot of reasons, some understandable, some less so. but they really haven't jumped on any of these claims of fraud or irregularities. Your point is an interesting one. Thank you for bringing it up. Ralph and Rantoul, let's try again.
Hey, good morning. No chipmunk effect, huh?
No.
So, some would say it probably improves me. But as far as healing and reconciliation goes, number one, I can't reconcile with the socialist. We have very different aims and ideals. And so I don't condone any violence. I was disgusted by the entire year of Antifa and BLM nonsense that was whitewashed and just completely ignored. Mostly peaceful protests. Well, it's mostly peaceful unless you're the one getting your head caved in. And then number two, voting confidence, right? I've read the Navarro report. I've spent a lot of time listening to Rudy. Not so much Kraken Lady. She's kind of Sidney Powell's gone away. I'd like to hear more of her stuff. I think she was directed to take a subordinate role because they were trying to go through the, just the more legal framework, which Rudy was directing. And that's fine. But I'll tell you what, big lies matter. All right. We are not going away. The people that supported Trump, if the Democrats think that they're going to go full on socialist and we're going to fade into the ground like an earthworm after a heavy rain and the water subsides a little bit, ain't going to happen, people. We're going to be here. But the big problem, Dan and Amy, is that we must restore voter confidence. I've read enough of this stuff that I'm convinced that there was widespread fraud, not across the nation, but strategically. It was done very intelligently through regular, normal, strong-arm techniques. But I'm very suspicious of these Dominion machines at this point.
Well, and in Georgia, too, they told possible voters, like, hey, if you vote for the Democratic candidates, you're going to get a $2,000 stimulus check. Okay, why not go out and vote? $2,000, that's a lot of money.
Well, it was strategic. Ralph is right. It was strategic in advance of November 3rd by changing the rules of the game.
Yeah.
And that was an emphasis. There's a good write-up on this by John Solomon over at Just the News. That was a strategic decision Democrats made early on to take advantage of the pandemic and focus in on those big urban centers in swing states, which is arguably one of the reasons that Joe Biden underperformed everywhere except those versus Hillary Clinton or versus Obama in urban centers, except in those urban centers in those key swing states that we've spent the last 8 weeks talking about. Strategic decision from the outset. And Democrats at the federal level did an end run around Republicans, both at the federal level and the local level, since so many of those state legislatures are controlled by Republicans. But they went right along with or sat quietly by while the rules were rewritten. Jim in Wooddale.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
So I have a question for you, Dan. It's not sarcastic. I've been listening to you guys for quite some time, and you're probably one of the most intelligent people on the radio.
Not probably.
What more has to happen to – what more does this government have to do to us, be it state, local, or federal, before something happens like what happened in Washington, or an armed revolt, to justify it? I mean, what more has to happen? I don't understand. Where's the breaking point? Because there's no none of the judges are doing anything. The courts are already stacked. So what more has to happen? I don't understand.
Jim, thanks for the call and the question, and I take it at the room temperature in which you offered it. You know, I think it's a difficult question, and I really don't want to draw a line and say, you know, if this line is crossed, then I would say this, generally speaking, which I've said before, actually, in the context of our conversations in about COVID policy and the response. You can only take so much of people's liberty and property and ultimately life before you get a reaction. And I think there is a progression, as I alluded to a little bit earlier in the show, to this, where the response needs to be proportional to the transgression. So I'm not going to say it's going to be this moment. It's going to be, you know, somebody busting down, you know, a community's doors, or somebody shutting, you know, Wuhan China style, having the government come in and literally, you know, pound nails into your door to keep you in. Yeah. I just think that this is something that ebbs and flows based on the wrongs and the proportional response to those wrongs.
But what world?
But I'm not
are
saying
we...
there isn't a breaking point. Let me just be clear. I'm not saying
point,
there isn't.
Libby Andrews, a realtor at Properties, lost her job because she took a selfie on the steps of the Capitol. She didn't go in charge in there and, you know, destroy property or steal anything. She was
right.
Just at a rally. What world, communist world, are we living in? This has got to stop. And everybody, I mean, I hope to God she keeps or goes into business by herself, but everybody should buy property from Libby Andrews, because what happened to her is bull jive, and it's got to stop.
Jan in Oak Lawn.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. You know, I'm listening to this impeachment and all this other stuff, and if you talk about unity and all this stuff, if they go through with it, do they really think that the people are just going to lay down and go to bed? These people, they're throwing, really, I think, gasoline on the fire. And why can't they just let it?
Oh, sorry, Jan, I didn't mean to cut you off there, but I get your point. Number one, they don't really want unity. I should say, number one, they don't believe that unity is possible. It's just a word that a politician uses. When a politician uses, most politicians use it, it doesn't mean anything. It's not really feasible. And number two, they don't actually want it. To conquer, you divide. You don't unify. Just keep that in mind. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, and Facebook is going to save the Republic. And Michelle Obama has been enlisted to help, too, or she's enlisted herself to help. Facebook is going to save the Republic by... banning Trump from Facebook and Instagram. Is he a big Instagram guy?
No, I don't know.
Until Biden takes office on January 20th. He's back up on Twitter per the posting of his national address video yesterday.
Yeah, I saw that.
Mm-hmm. Josh Hawley also took to Twitter. He had his book deal nixed with Simon & Schuster because... of his position on the election, the fact that he offered an objection to during the time of the electoral certification on Wednesday.
And he's going to pursue legal action against Simon & Schuster, which he should do.
God,
where are we living?
He tweeted out, "This could not be more Orwellian." Yep. Although Simon & Schuster is not the government. Simon & Schuster is canceling my contract because I was representing my constituents, leading a debate on the Senate floor on voter integrity, which they have now decided to redefine as sedition. They're not the only ones. George Will has also accused Cruz and Hawley of sedition. Let me be clear, this is not just a contract dispute. It's a direct assault on the First Amendment. Only approved speech can now be published. This is the left looking to cancel everyone they don't approve of. I will fight this cancel culture with everything I have. We'll see you in court. You have no First Amendment right to a book contract with Simon & Schuster, just point of order. And Josh Hawley knows this. He's former attorney general. Right. He's a Yale law grad. He knows this. I'm not telling him anything he doesn't know. So there's a little bit of posturing going on here. But his point about the left looking to cancel everyone they don't approve of seems closer to the mark. Abigail Schreier, who has had some experience with being canceled by the left, Joe Rogan felt the ire of unacceptable viewpoints when he had Abigail Schreier on his podcast. She tweeted in response because she wrote a book about transgender politics. We've had her on the show to talk about it. You're not entitled to your book contract. Can quickly become United doesn't have to let you on its planes. Marriott doesn't have to let you stay at its hotels. Or Visa doesn't have to let you use its cards. And maybe that's the point. Now, United, Marriott, public places of accommodation, a little bit different than Simon & Schuster. But she's suggesting there's a progression here. And I don't think she's necessarily off the mark. Oh, and by the way, in terms of where it's okay to return after a transgression, where you won't be canceled, is if the transgression is from a politically acceptable viewpoint. And so I'm happy to report that Steve Scully, confirmed liar, has returning to C-SPAN. Remember, in October, in advance of his being tapped to moderate a presidential debate that didn't happen, of course, but he was scheduled to do so. He had this exchange about Trump with Scaramucci on Twitter, and then he lied and said his Twitter account was hacked. He later admitted the lie and was put on leave by C-SPAN.
And he's back now?
And he has been reinstated. C-SPAN saying, while it was appropriate in October for Steve to be immediately relieved of his duties leading our 2020 election coverage, we reiterate our belief that now, having completed a three-month administrative leave, he can continue to contribute to C-SPAN's mission. Well, that's interesting. It's not just about the 2020 election. It's about Steve Scully's credibility as a journalist, one would think. But again, because the transgression came from a particular direction, reconciliation is possible. Meanwhile, a position that Josh Hawley staked out, or a book that Abigail Schreier wrote, that is unacceptable, and they need to be delisted, as does President Trump.
Why didn't
and Michelle Obama saying he should be banned from social media platforms forever and ever, amen, and a woman.
Well, what about Kamala Harris? I mean, she was promoting violence during the summer.
They're not going to stop, and this is a movement, I'm telling you. They're not going to stop, and everyone beware. Because they're not going to stop. They're not going to stop before Election Day in November, and they're not going to stop after Election Day. And that should be, everyone should take note of that on both levels. That this isn't, they're not going to let up, and they should not.
Was she banned from Facebook? She's promoting violence. She's encouraging people to. It's her call to action, Dan.
I don't know. I mean, that's not promoting violence, as far as I'm concerned. They're not going to stop. Shouldn't say. I'm talking about the peaceful protesters. I'm not talking about violence. This any advocacy is somehow violence. We start to get into like we're undergrads at an Ivy League school where somebody says something that I disagree with, and I'm physically wounded. That is an act of violence. It's all a bit frenzied for me. But for more on the tech piece of it. We're pleased to be joined by Stephen Levy. He is editor-at-large at Wired Magazine. He's the author of numerous books, including most recently, Facebook, The Inside Story. He also had an interesting recent column about a 25-year-old bet about the end and whether tech would facilitate the end of the American experiment that came due last year. Stephen Levy, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks. Good morning.
Good morning. So it's just starting with Facebook, since you wrote a book about it. It's been sort of the reporting that Mark Zuckerberg and per the criticism he's received from the left, that Mark Zuckerberg is trying to walk sort of the open forum line a little bit more carefully than perhaps some of his tech colleagues. Is that a fair characterization of Mark Zuckerberg, or are they all sort of the same mindset when it comes to their forums being free forums or their effort to be transparent, and they're all sort of just in the business of trying to be as open and transparent as they need to be to avoid regulations they don't want to see imposed?
Right. Well, that's a handful, but I'd say in short, the answer is probably yes. I mean, they're trying to do two things. One is three things. One is to be a hugely successful and profitable company, which they've done. And Mark Zuckerberg is unbelievably rich. Facebook's worth a lot, and you know, over 3 billion people use its services. But the other thing is that, you know, he wants people to be able to express themselves, but he also wants the platform to be someplace where it isn't so horrible. People run screaming, and his employees, you know, can't face their families when they ask them, what's the kind of place are you working for? And then, you know, he tries to thread this political needle, as you mentioned, because the conservatives say, how dare you take down our stuff when, you know, they take down things because their lies are destructive, or, you know, they give disinformation about COVID. And, you know, the other side says, wait a minute, you know, you're not taking down enough. Because look at all this horrible stuff that's on there. Like, you know, you've sponsored a more recently, you know, this Stop the Steal group, and you know, and people are plotting against the government. So, you know, that's a lot to handle. And I have to say, he hasn't done it particularly in a clean way, because he sort of wants it all, and they're not putting a stake in the ground. I have a newsletter out today in Wired where I'm saying, look, you know, really what you should want to do, and for the long run it'll help you more, is just to make the platform a better place to be in terms of keeping the quality of what you do up. That's something you could do under the First Amendment, and at least for now under this law we have that allows companies to moderate what happens on their platform without being responsible for individual pieces of content that people put up. If someone says something libelous, you won't get sued. Facebook won't get sued, but the speaker will. And this is something that I think in the long term would be good, but they don't pursue that. And my book talks about the history, how growth is really so much more important than anything else at Facebook, that he looks the other way, you know, or didn't hear it when they kept telling him the content on there, some of it was terrible and hurting society.
It's such a fascinating position to take. At the one hand, the Facebook user is the product. On the other hand, where we need to sort of manage our whatever billion users, we need to. I mean, it's almost a sort of social conditioning that is going on, and I don't know. I find it terribly problematic all the way around. It's actually, it seems to me, quite simple. It turns out that humanity is quite, we're quite a messy bunch, we human beings, and there's a lot of ugliness, and there's a lot of beauty too, and you're going to get it all when a billion people, or how many ever it is, start interacting. And so why not, and I'd love to hear all the tech oligarchs talk about this, answer this question. What is wrong with the Louis Brandeis formulation that the cure to speech you don't like is more speech?
Well, it's interesting because the people at Facebook describe themselves as Brandeis First Amendment people.
That's an inaccurate description. I can describe myself however there's my conduct.
That's the way they like to think of themselves. And I think in Facebook, that hasn't proven, you know, to work out. And I actually don't think it would prove to work out. When you say the antidote to speech that circulates very widely, to say, for instance, that a certain treatment for COVID, this will solve COVID. And, you know, if that percolates very widely throughout Facebook, I think it is Facebook's responsibility not to have somewhere else on the platform people saying, oh, actually, that doesn't work. It'll kill you, that treatment. So I think it's something different. There are certain things, you know, like hardcore porn, they say we don't want on our site, and they do a good job generally of keeping it off. And I think they have to, you know, and they have the technical means to do it. It costs money, you know, to sort of draw a line of what things they can't have on the platform that are destructive, right? So if you look at society as a whole, I think you could adopt that Brandeis stance, and we have. I mean, we have a First Amendment that allows hardcore porn, but you don't have to put it on your radio show.
No. Okay. So let me expand then. You could follow the Supreme Court's jurisprudence on free speech. We also have FCC licensing requirements on our show that Mark Zuckerberg doesn't have. But that's sort of secondary.
Yeah, if you were on the internet only, it wouldn't be there, right?
Yeah, I understand. But that's sort of secondary. Of course, you can eliminate content categories. But the idea that you have arbiters of what is factual and what is not, rather than the interplay. Somebody calls on our show and says that XYZ drug is the magic elixir to cure COVID, and we know from our conversations that that's not the case, or we start to ask questions to probe whether the quality of this person's argument, in the same way that you can do back and forth on postings and so forth. How is that not a better format than faceless Facebook minders with all sorts of worldviews in terms of the content they want to see amplified and the content they want to see minimized, coming and Twitter and so on, and Google algorithms and so on and so forth? How is what I'm suggesting not a better approach than the approach that big tech has taken?
Well, except for certain carve-outs, that basically is the approach. The question is, how many carve-outs do you have? How many topics would you have where, you know, Facebook feels compelled to step in and do send it out to these fact-checkers that they pay? And, you know, there's not many fact-checkers, but there's like tens of thousands, you know, maybe 15,000 people who sit in, you know, before display screens, and every 40 seconds say, you know, this violates our policy, that doesn't violate our policy. And there's 47 pages of stuff, which is, you know, horrible things that you can't do on Facebook. It is a genuine problem, but, you know, it's a company that has the right to say, we can draw the lines of what goes on at our platform. You could say,
oh, I understand.
You know,
yeah, but aren't there different rules for different people?
Well,
and how does President Trump fight back?
Well,
there was different, you know, there's not different rules for different people, you know, at least in theory, and you know, there's just rules. And,
yeah, but the application,
you know,
is arbitrary.
But you know, so it's interesting because it gets back to really the story I just published. There's one guy who felt that technology could solve these problems, right? And one person who said, actually, technology is so horrible, and I'm starting from, you know, when people use the bow and arrow, that we've gotten to a place where, you know, society is about to collapse. And, you know, he had written a book about the Luddites, these people who tried to put a stop to it in England by burning down the looms, you know, the mechanized looms, and they got put down. But he thought, you know, actually their ideas were pretty good, because to bring this thing to a stop, and they made a bet to say in 25 years would society collapse. Now, this argument we're having now, you know, I think it's just an outbreak of one different way to talk about that bet, because what's different about Facebook is the scale of it, the billions of people. You could organize something like that with 100,000 people, maybe, and, you know, certainly with like 1,000 people, where you could have that argument. And, you know, if someone posits something, then there's someone else to posit something else, and everyone like listens to all the arguments and nods and says yes. But when you have something like Facebook, where people are, you know, circulating dangerous misinformation, being dangerous that might kill you, they, you know, want to take a step to keep that off, and they should keep a step to keep that off. The question is, where is the line? And, you know, and that's a difficult question. And, you know, cause sometimes they deal with it well. Other times they don't deal with it well, because, as you mentioned, you know, it's a business model is something which is an entirely different argument, which impinges on this one, of course, because they want to keep people on the network and keep them seeing more ads, which are very effective on Facebook. So, you know, it's a tough problem, and I think it gets not only to Facebook, but sort of where technology has taken us, that we're in these conundrums with imperfect people trying to solve them.
No, I agree, and I thought that the Social Dilemma documentary on Facebook was pretty good, too, including a bunch of tech expats, as it were. Unfortunately, we don't have more time, but I do want to direct people to your column again, which I'll tweet out. A 25-year-old bet comes due, has tech destroyed society? Because that's the conversation we're really having. It's not that Facebook doesn't have the right to manage their platform. It's what's the cultural impact? And if this is a good model that should be replicated, then why don't we have some institution regulating all of our verbal exchanges with one another, and so on and so forth? It's the cultural impact. It's the societal impact, which is sort of what that bet was all about, which is why I found it so interesting. Stephen Levy.
Yeah, well, we have. Yeah,
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, we're out. But Stephen Levy, editor at Wired, author of numerous books, including about Facebook, The Inside Story. Thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Great discussion. Have a great day.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
And it feels so good. You switch to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Let's talk about the two deaths that occurred on Wednesday, or that occurred as a result of what happened on Wednesday, in the one instance that were at someone else's hands. Starting with U.S. Capitol Police Officer Brian Sicknick, who collapsed when he returned to his office on Wednesday, taken to the hospital where he died yesterday, reportedly after being struck in the head with a fire extinguisher during the violence on Wednesday. This is New York Times reporting on that matter. The assailant, as far as I know, has not been identified. There's no one in custody. So obviously we want that individual brought to justice, and we don't want to forget the name Brian Sicknick, the Capitol Hill police officer. The other, we talked about a bit already, of course, is Ashley Babbitt. And interesting, some of the reporting on Ashley Babbitt, her social media posts, her previous legal issues, in addition to the fact that she served 14 years in the Air Force. This was a statement that was made by her ex-husband about Ashley Babbitt. This is interesting. She was married, I guess he was Air Force. She was married to him for 14 years. He said, I absolutely feel terrible and sick to my stomach about it. She was never afraid to speak her mind, and in a way that was her way of speaking her mind, going to the rally, for example. He said that she was very loud and opinionated, but caring, sweet, thoughtful, and loving. This is Timothy McEntee, who she served in the Air Force with from April 05 to May of 2019. And I just saw the video yesterday. I know the Capitol police officer who shot her is on administrative leave pending the investigation. But I just saw the video yesterday. Perhaps you've all seen it.
I posted it on my Twitter of her trying to break through the window. They broke through the window.
When the shooting occurred, sort of the reverse angle, some of the videos that were posted on Wednesday were, you know, she was already on the ground, but did you actually see what precipitated the shooting? And it was exactly that. Obviously, she was already inside the Capitol, so she was somewhere she shouldn't have been.
Right.
There were a bunch of people breaking the windows of the door on the doors into the House chamber. And you saw the picture on Wednesday, actually, of the reverse shot, the barricading of the doors with a number of officers and their guns drawn at those people that were trying to get in through, that were breaking down the windows and ostensibly for the purposes of getting into the chamber. So then she, because she's small, I mean, the windows were slight, she starts to climb through the window, mm-hmm. which she shouldn't have done, and she takes a bullet in the neck or the chest. I don't know.
And it was just one shot that was fired. It wasn't an array of bullets. It was just one shot sending a signal. And then people thought an active shooter was going on, and it wasn't.
it was not one shot to send a signal. It was one shot, and of course it blew her back outside of the window and onto the ground on the other side of the door.
Mm-hmm.
Does anybody have concerns about whether or not that was a good shoot? Because I do. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. As we have talked about at any number of instances, lethal force is, the justification for lethal force is not just somebody is committing a criminal act. How many times have we had this discussion in the context of police-involved shootings when it's been, you know, white police officer and
a black,
and black suspect or assailant?
And would this have been treated differently had she been black instead of a white woman?
Differently how?
Well, people would care, and the mainstream media would just
oh.
now put it in the B block. Just, oh, and she was shot, and the officer's on administrative leave, pending the investigation. Move on. Nothing to see here. She brought it upon herself, which a lot of people who do get shot by police, they do bring it upon themselves because they're doing something they shouldn't be doing, like resisting arrest. She's doing something she shouldn't have been doing, and that's trying to break into, you know, get into the house floor. But that was excessive force, of course.
Well, that's the
just
question.
Just because trespassing, you deserve to die? No, you don't.
Well, that's the question. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. The trespassing was wrong. The violence was wrong. Obviously, a police officer is dead. That is terrible, wrong, and somebody needs to be held accountable for his murder. But her clearly unarmed climbing through, well, I think she was clearly unarmed. I guess we'll hear the officer's perspective or reporting on the officer's perspective at some point, but she was unarmed.
Yeah, she was.
And she's climbing through this window, and you have multiple officers with guns drawn on the other side. Is it possible they had a reasonable fear for their life? Is it possible that she posed some imminent threat to public safety such that lethal force was justified? I'm trying to imagine a scenario where shooting her
would be justified.
Was a proportional response. I'm having a difficult time. Robert in Park Ridge, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Dan and Amy, that was not a good shoot. Yes, that woman did not pose any physical threat to that officer, and what they usually are supposed to do is stop or I'll shoot. And he didn't do that. No, he just started firing. He's a moron. All right? So that's all I have to say. Thanks. Have a good
Thanks, Robert.
She loses his job. Why don't we know his name? You always seem to know a police officer's name right away when there's a bad shoot. But in this case, silence.
Lucas and Joliet.
Hey, Dan. Nice to talk to you guys again. I just want to comment. You're absolutely correct on this. Lethal force should only be applied when all lesser means have failed. So if she was unarmed, that law enforcement officer should not have drawn his weapon. She wasn't a threat to him.
Thanks for the call, Lucas. I mean, we have gone through so many of these cases, and we reach different conclusions based on the facts, because that's what you have to look at. It's not the race. It's the circumstances. It's the facts. And what did the individual do? What did the law enforcement do? What is the law? What is the training?
See the video, too, the Capitol Police, they moved down a barricade to let people get closer and to get on the Capitol steps. What did they think was going to happen? I know that might be an ancillary issue, but, you know, they let the mob go through the barricades. And why weren't more police officers deployed? And they had no riot gear on. It's like they didn't know that this was coming.
Well, and that's in part why you had the Capitol Hill police chief resign yesterday.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to be interested to watch the development of the coverage here and whether or not there are calls. I've seen one video or two videos, but one video of the shooting. And based on what I see, if we had seen this in another context, like a traffic stop and a white cop and a black individual who was stopped, I think we would be hearing endless discussions on cable news and elsewhere about everything you said, the identification of the officer, the officer's professional history. Why isn't this officer being charged? Should this officer be charged with, with murder, involuntary manslaughter?
And instead, prosecutors might charge Trump with encouraging the mob to storm the Capitol building. I mean, let's stay focused here, people.
Well, that's what's being discussed instead. There's no question about that. Paul in Plainfield.
Hey, so a couple things. One, we should be giving the officer the benefit of the doubt, in my opinion. Second, I don't think we can compare this to a normal traffic stop because there was a mob outside trying to get into the room, of which they were either defending or locked into, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So maybe the officer was thinking, if that person got through, what happens when the rest of the mob gets through, and protecting their safety? That's my only thought.
Okay. I mean, thanks for the call, Paul. It's a fair point to raise. I would just say again that the circumstances, if you see the window that was broken, and again, that was their presence was wrong, the breaking of the window was wrong, the attempt to get into the chamber was wrong, all illegal, all should be arrested and prosecuted. Okay? We're not talking about whether it was right or wrong. We're talking about the proportionality of the force used to repel it. If you look at the window of the door, it doesn't seem to me that it was realistic to believe that you were going to have a mob overrun, right, at least three officers with their guns drawn as they're trying to, you know, sidle through this opening one at a time at best. And as I say, I don't think I could have gotten through that door. Ashley Babbitt, you know, she's smaller and she was, I don't know if she could have got through the door either, but she was trying to, and I mean, she didn't get in the chamber. She was, you know, through the window opening and then she took the shot and was blown back.
Backwards. Yeah.
So I said, I'm not making a definitive statement on it, but I am saying based on what we see, this is what I see. And so we're asking you what you see, what you think. Sue in St. Charles.
Hey, Sue.
Do we have... hold on.
There you go.
All right, give me Sue in St. Charles. I'm having a mouse problem here. Oh, I guess we're having a phone problem here instead. Okay. All right, we'll see if we can correct our phones, and we'll come back and take a few more of your calls. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Dan and Amy, okay, we were talking about the Capitol Hill police shooting and killing of Ashley Babbitt and whether or not, based on what is in the public arena, the video of the shooting, you think it was justified. Let's try again here. Sue in St. Charles. I can't pull her up. Can you guys pull her up? Hi, Sue.
Hi, Sue.
Hi there. Good morning.
Morning.
So, this is like a touchy subject because I think there's so much racial, there are so many racial issues that cause division, but it's this kind of thing. In my opinion, when we sat there for months and watched mainly African-American people smashing in Michigan Avenue, looting, really being violent with tear gas, bombs, things that could really hurt the police, and no one said anything about it. And we watched it over and over and over again, and it's no wonder that there's a group of people in this country, a lot of people in this country, that are frustrated with the hypocrisy that's going on in this in our country. And, you know, overall, this was 99% of a peaceful march, truly a peaceful march, from what I can understand and the people that you've interviewed and who have been on television. And you've got about 90 maybe people that were complete idiots, don't get me wrong. But for this small woman, like one of your previous callers suggested, for this small woman to enter through a without a weapon, none of these people had weapons, to be shot, I think was a little trigger happy.
Right. She didn't have a weapon, but 55 people have been arrested so far, 8 on gun charges, and one suspect had a semi-automatic and 11 Molotov cocktails.
Okay, that's not good, but it, maybe perhaps that was one of the people that they think was an Antifa member. I mean, that kind of stuff to me smacks of true anarchists.
Yeah,
not
I agree.
The main people that were at this rally that were mainly older, working people that actually had jobs that were there trying to get their point across because no one's listening to them, which is why Trump gets elected in the first place. I mean, if he wasn't such a big mouth and went off all the time, I think he would have been one of the greatest presidents we had with the accomplishments he's done and made. But nobody's listening to half the country, and I just feel like it's going to get more and more divided because, especially if they try to impeach Trump, it is going to put a major division in this country because no one's listening to the working class.
Thanks for the call, Sue. Yeah, I'd like to see the profile on those arrested with bomb-making materials. I don't like to see anybody arrested in connection with the bomb, the pipe bombs that were found at the RNC and the DNC, because it speaks to the question of just a handful of Trump supporters or Trump supporters plus Antifa or mainly Antifa plus Trump supporters in the Capitol. The combination of the two. But we need to hold individuals responsible for individual action and those individuals that were part of the mob, part of violence against police officers, the whoever it was that killed that Capitol Hill police officer. I mean, of course, all of these people need to be brought to justice. But by the way, just as a quick aside, you know, nothing new in this world except the history we don't know. Thank you, Harry S. Truman. 1954 United States Capitol shooting. Four Puerto Rican nationalists shot 30 rounds from semi-automatic pistols from the Ladies' Gallery, a balcony for visitors, the House of Representatives, in pursuit of their desire for Puerto Rican independence from U.S. rule. Four nationalists were arrested. They unfurled a Puerto Rican flag. They wounded five members of the House, thankfully, all recovered. They were arrested, tried, and convicted in federal court, effectively given life imprisonment. Until in 1978 and 1979, they were pardoned by Jimmy Carter, and all four were returned to Puerto Rico. So I guess one of the things that we can encourage President Trump or maybe President Biden to do, don't pardon anybody who is involved in violence at Capitol Hill. You know, unlike Democrats of the past who condone terrorists, Jimmy Carter, or like state institutions in Illinois who condone terrorists like Northwestern University, like the University of Illinois, Chicago. Like the University of Illinois at Chicago. Yeah. How about that in terms of who's really serious about law and order and who's just preening law and order right now because it's an opportunity to attack not just Trump, but anybody who supports Trump.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Before we get to our next guest, I did want to give one more caller an opportunity to chime in on the conversation we were having about the officer-involved shooting that killed Ashley Babbitt at the Capitol on Wednesday because, you know, wanted to get viewpoints that run contrary to my own based on what we've seen. So let's talk to Gary in Milwaukee. Gary, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Morning.
So I just want to kind of deal with some facts. You had a violent breach the Capitol building. Fact is that some of them had firearms. It was a long rifle found, and there was some explosive. What has the golden rule always been for an officer recently when it's come to the shooting of a black person? I fear for my life. We don't know what was in that man's head, that officer that fired that round. We don't know what those people had concealed. So we can't speculate on anything at this point. We have to let justice run its course.
Well, what about firing rubber bullets or tear gas or something else besides lethal?
They didn't have rubber bullets. Thanks for the call, Gary. They didn't have rubber. This was not a tactical response. This was people on site. The Capitol Hill Police. They had sidearms. Yeah. So, I just wanted to give Gary a chance.
Okay.
For more on this topic and global issues, because that is her purview. We're pleased now to be joined by KT McFarland. She is a former First Deputy National Security Advisor, President Trump. She's also the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. And she provided an excited utterance the last time I spoke with her on my syndicated show, Amy, that I know you're going to be interested in. Unsolicited testimonial from KT McFarland. She'll probably live to regret these words.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you. You absolutely have the best sort of high-level show of anybody in the country, so it's an honor.
Again, KT, I just want you to stipulate that you're under no duress to make that statement.
That was no deep fake. That was the honest truth.
Oh, hi,
KT. KT, great to have you back. Turning to the week that has transpired and particularly everything that happened Wednesday, just wanted to give you an opportunity to comment on the violence, the politics, the resignations, wherever you want to take it.
I don't think it serves any purpose for me to say who's at fault and all that stuff. I want to, because everybody's doing that. I'd like to take a step back or even a step up and say, let's look at this from the big picture. What's the real problem in America today? It's not that Biden is going to be president, although I think he's going to have disastrous foreign and economic policies. It's not Donald Trump, even though I think he behaved abominably since the election. It's not even China, which plans to supplant us as the world's dominant power and then rewrite the rules of order at our expense. I think the greatest problem facing us is us. It's that half the country hates the other half of the country. You know, half the country thinks Donald Trump stole the election in 2016. The other half thinks he stole it that Biden stole it in 2020. We cannot go on like this, because democracy is built on a shared foundation of faith in our institutions, in our officials, in our equal application of the law. And we don't have that right now. We're doubting the elections. We're doubting election results on both sides. So I think everybody's saying we've got to come together, we have to heal. But for most people who say that, what they really mean is, you other guys, you have to come around to my way of thinking and, by the way, apologize too. I think we need to take another step and say there are only two people in the country right now who could fix this. And if they don't fix it, woe on them and woe on us. One person is Donald Trump. He needs to go to his supporters and say, the election is over, and the thing that we won was our principles and our policies succeeded beyond all belief in 4 years' time. And the country has just voted at the state level, at the local level, at the federal level, and Congress to put Trump policies and Trump people in office. So we have a success that can live on but stand down for now. And then Joe Biden has to go to his people and say, I can't govern with half the country hating me. So you, my far radical wing, you guys got to stand down. This is not revenge time. This is not we're going to show those guys time. This is time where everybody has to give something and not expect the other side to come to their way of thinking. And here's why it's going to be a hard. This is out of the comfort zone of both of these guys. I know them both. I know President Trump really well, and I know Biden passingly well for the last 45 years. It's out of their comfort zones. Trump wants to fight. He's a fighter. I say to Donald Trump, my friend, take off your gloves. Joe Biden, he's an amiable go-along, get-along Joe. He doesn't like to fight with people. I'm saying to Joe, you put on your gloves. This is outside of both of your comfort zones, but you have to do it for the nation. But you also have to do it for yourselves, because Donald Trump, if you don't fix this, and if you don't let your legacy be that the movement that you started lives on and thrives, then you will go down in history in a very bad way and not a way you want.
So, KT, you don't think his concession speech went far enough last night?
President Trump? I think it was a great speech. I wish he had given it a long time ago. And Amy, here's the thing. I believe that the Congress what they were trying to do 2 days ago in questioning the whole electoral, I think that's the right thing to do. I don't think it was ever going to change any results. I didn't think any of these lawsuits would work, but I thought it was important for the American people because, again, half the country needs to feel that they've been heard, and to go away without the sense that they've been heard just sets us up for another 4 years of acrimony and fighting. And I thought Donald Trump gave a great speech last night. I wish he had given it before, because he's been one of the most successful presidents in American history. He got us the vaccine when everybody said it would never happen. He got peace in the Middle East when everybody said it would not happen, and it hasn't happened in a couple of thousand years. He stood up to China when no American president would do that. He revived the American economy to the point where everybody across the entire socioeconomic, racial, ethnic spectrum had better jobs and high-paying jobs and pride in themselves. So I'm just sad that if he doesn't fix this, that his legacy will not be all of his great achievements, and the fact that his movement will live on well beyond his presidency. His legacy will be what we've seen in the last couple of days.
James Freeman, writing in the Wall Street Journal, suggested, to your point, frankly, that Trump and Biden should have a public meeting, a public handshake, before President Trump leaves office, as sort of, I think, you know, advancing exactly the position that you're articulating. Would that be a way to do it, rather than even articulate the viewpoints you expressed in silos, one to their supporters and another to their supporters? What about a joint between the two?
I think that's a joint handshake and a joint meeting. That's a great first step, but that's not going to be enough, because then everybody goes back to their silo. Mm-hmm. I think it needs to be President Trump continuing to be on the national stage, continuing to talk about his policies. Stop looking in the rearview mirror about I was robbed. Because, you know, look, at anybody knows, if you look, spend all your time looking in the rearview mirror, you never look forward. Mm-hmm. And Donald Trump has done an enormous great thing for this nation. He will be the most important political figure of the, certainly conservative Republican figure of the 21st century, if he seizes it. And Biden, if Biden doesn't tell his people to back off and stop with this defunding the police and we're going to punish everybody, and we got our list of Trump supporters we're going to go after and we're going to pursue in the courts for parking ticket violations. I mean, if he doesn't do that, he won't be able to govern. And so, really, he'll be finished before he even takes the oath of office in 2 weeks.
I want to go back to a couple of things you mentioned on the international stage. Let's start with Middle East peace. And it's probably a larger question about the stability of the world in under a President Biden. Is that going to be built upon, or is it going to recede? And starting with all of these essentially detente agreements between Israel and former Israel antagonists.
I think that the Abraham Accords, those are the deals between Israel and the Arab countries. Now, it's important to remember that we think of the Middle East and all the guys who are Muslims as the same. No, they're two big schisms. One is Iran, and they're not Arabs. They're Persians, and they're very proud of the difference. They think they're far superior to the Arabs. They're Persians and they're Shiite. The Arabs, the Gulf Arabs, that's Saudi Arabia, Qatar, United Arab Emirates, all those guys, they're Arabs. And they're a different version of Islam. And the Arab versus Persian is really more important than the different version of Islam. So the peace has been made between Israel and those Arabs. And they realize that their common enemy is Iran. And I think that even if the Biden administration tries to screw it up and go and give Iran goodies and bailouts and nuclear weapons, the Abraham Accords, in fact, will continue and probably even be strengthened by the Biden administration, not willingly, but because they'll find common cause against Iran. I think the Biden administration will probably enrich Iran, will go back to some kind of wackadoodle nuclear deal, which never prohibited or stopped Iran's nuclear program. It only put it on pause. And then Iran will get nuclear weapons within a couple of years and probably ignites a nuclear arms race. So in the end of the day, it's probably a more destabilized world, but we're not in the middle of it. As far as China, I think that's the only game that really matters.
And with respect to China, how concerned are you that we will return to the pre-Trump posture of appeasement?
Terrified. Because China, if you look at what they've said in the last year, what they've said in the last 2 weeks, they have every intention of using this pandemic as their breakout moment. That they had always planned to replace the United States by mid-century as the leading technology, leading economic, leading military power, and then they shove us aside and they rule the world. But the pandemic which they brought on, mm-hmm. They are going to use this because they feel within 4 or 5 years they're there. And when Biden is elected president, they think, oh, we know what we've got now. We bought this guy. And plus, Biden has always been soft on China, and all the people he's appointed to his senior positions in his administration, they're all soft on China. I'm very worried that Biden just goes back. He'll get a couple of deals. It'll sound good. The PR will be terrific. But China will be, you know, robbing our lunch.
Will they ever be held accountable for what they did?
No.
Releasing the virus and destroying our youth?
No. I think, but here's how they could be held accountable. They'll never admit it. That's not part of their plan. Remember what they do to their own people who dissent. They crush them, and whether it's in Hong Kong or whether it's even Chinese who live overseas. Any country that dares criticize China, they crush them. What they're doing to the Australian economy, they're trying to devastate the Australian economy. So I don't think China's ever held accountable in the way that you're talking about. The way to hold China accountable, and what I think President Trump would have done in a second term, is to go around to the countries who are feeling the boot on their neck from China and saying, it's now or never. We have to get together. We free market democracies in the world. And we get together, we're by far more economically powerful and technologically powerful than China. And we get together, and we, as a group, go to China and say, now you play by the rules. And if you don't, we're going to decouple from you, and we're going to have our own economic, political, diplomatic, technological, financial system, and then you're on your own.
As a former First Deputy National Security Advisor, you must be tickled that after 4 years, I think in some parts, it's still in the Democrat Socialist Party, it still continues, 4 years of Russian collusion allegations, you have individuals like Fareed Zakaria believing it is now safe to come out and admit what the substance of the record suggests, that actually President Trump was very tough on Russia, Trump and the Trump administration, very tough on Russia during his presidency.
The thing about Donald Trump is he says a lot of stuff, and I don't necessarily listen to what he says. I watch what he does. And to your point, Dan, he was very tough on Russia. He was tough on Russian sanctions. He stopped a lot of transfer of technology that was going to Russia through third parties. He encircled Russia sort of politically and diplomatically. He was very tough on Russia. Why? Because Donald Trump was setting Russia up for a deal, and he knows that the best way to negotiate a deal is not to go to them and plead. It's to have leverage that you whack over their heads if they don't agree with you.
She is KT McFarland, former First Deputy National Security Advisor, President Trump, author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan, and thank you, Amy.
Thank you, and she joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. The December jobs report, minus 140,000 jobs. The first time in 7 months that there has been a reduction in the number of jobs created. And you know what that tells me, Amy?
What?
You know what that means?
What?
That's great news for the stock market. Because everything is great news for the stock market, apparently, even, right. No matter how cataclysmic. No matter how anti-growth, no matter how contractionary, good news for the stock market, 140,000 jobs lost in December, right? Scott Shalady, Scott the Cow Guy Shalady, Fox Business contributor, joins us now. Hi, Scott.
Yeah, that's it's not good. I mean, we were expecting a gain of around 70,000, and we lost 140,000, and you're exactly right. I, you know, it's perplexing, and I listen to my cohorts on all the other different outlets, channels, and radio, and they try to explain it away when I don't think they should be, because I think it just sows mistrust between the general public and people in the industry. Sometimes stuff just does moves for the wrong reasons, and I think this is a classic example. There's nowhere else to put your money.
Let me explain it to you, Scott. All right.
Uh-oh, he's got some explaining to do.
What we have here in the industry is known as the fiscal Goldilocks scenario that has presented itself, We have, with socialists winning two Senate seats in Georgia, we now have confirmation that we will continue to get easy money, funny money. The printing presses will continue to roll. That's good news. We won't get the big tax increases and the regulatory overreach because we'll have the easy money and because there'll be just enough moderates in the House and the Senate, Joe Manchin in the Senate, a couple in the House, to forestall any big tax increases or regulatory overreaches. So what you have is the Pareto equilibrium, if you will, for policy.
Okay, well, that is the pill that is being shoved down the goose's neck right now, and I think I don't agree with it. I mean, I understand that, but I don't have to agree with it, and here's where I come from. Last I checked, you have to have a decent economy. I mean, look, we've been growing at a slower rate month on month. Yesterday's jobless claims combined with, I mean, we have 19 million people still on some sort of unemployment. And today we have 140,000 lost jobs, of which 500,000 were lost in leisure and hospitality. A half a million. Now, this goes to what I've been saying. We haven't been really counting all of those businesses and all those big buildings in New York, you know, L.A. and Chicago that aren't going to come back because there's nobody in the buildings. And they're only, say, in New York, occupied to about 8% occupancy. These businesses in the cities have to have these buildings at 80% occupancy to make money. So we've had our head in the sand. It's now starting to come to fruition, and we've just walked into a guy that does want to have higher taxes, said he's running on higher taxes. It's actually a $4.4 trillion tax hike plan. But the market continues to go up because everybody thinks exactly what you just said. But I think that the basic premise is we have to have a decent economy, and we're starting to slow down. We could have a bad economy. And so what happens to businesses that are going to go out of business? I mean, we've lost at least 20% of our small businesses right now for good. Now, we might, and I think that number is growing, and I think it's actually double that. So, yeah, I guess we can all put our money in the stock market and we continue to play that Ponzi scheme, but it's going to come back to haunt you. You can't continue to go up on vapor. And look, I'm not here to tell anybody where to put their money, but I'm just going to tell you that the yellow caution lights have got to be flashing because you've seen insane rallies in Bitcoin, and you've seen the stock market shrug off anything that's been bad, especially today. Because, hey, this is where the easy money is going. We're going
to
get
exactly. If you were here to tell us where to put our money, you would have told us months ago to put all our money in Bitcoin. Where were you, Scott?
Yeah, I think you did.
Well, I'm not a big fan of that either. So, I mean, look, I can't believe people pay more for bottled water than gasoline, too. So, I mean, there's a few things out there that still defy common sense. So just be careful because we're getting into la-la land when it comes to investors. And I do believe, I really do, that the man on the street has a better feeling for things than a lot of times the people in the industry. And this is sowing mistrust. When you continue to hear lockdown, second wave of the virus, second strain of the virus, maybe third strain of the virus. Yeah, and then you see the stock market continue to go up every day. I think that this sows mistrust, and I think it should because, you know, we're still on some very shaky ground. And again, I say this every single time I come on. We are getting – our economy is slowly coming back, but it's slowly coming back at a worse pace every month. And at some point in time, that could turn over. And then what is the administration going to do? Are they going to tax everybody on a downturn? I mean, it's just insane. So you have to be very careful. I think this is – when you see moves like you have in Bitcoin, you have to stop to think, hey, things that go that, you know, in that direction for me can also go in the direction against me. And you got to really start to be careful here. Well, I really would stress that.
Scott, what do you think is going to happen to the stock market when all the blue states are bailed out? I mean, Pritzker was brimming from, you know, ear to ear smiling that, you know, that the Senate's now in Democratic hands because he wants to get himself on, get some of that money.
Well, I mean, I guess if you have real estate in Illinois, you got to be taking a little bit of a sigh of relief. I suppose that, you know, I've thought about it.
I don't think so.
We've got a family farm. Well, I mean,
not real estate in Illinois. I don't think so. Whatever bailout may come, it will be pennies on the dollar that are required. I mean, what's the bailout going to be? $250 billion for Illinois? I don't think so. I mean, we have $10 billion in unpaid bills in real time. So, what is a couple of billion dollars or access to another municipal facility from the Fed mean for Illinois? It doesn't mean anything.
Dan, I think the people, you know, the people that can move did and are, and there's a lot of the people that are left, unfortunately, are going to be holding that bag. And, you know, that's happening in, from California as well. And obviously from some of the states, you know, New York and New Jersey down to Florida. I look, they're going to get some money, right? They're going to get more money had they, you know, this way than they would have had, right. You know, there had been a Trump administration or and or somebody would have held on to the Senate. But I don't understand. What I don't understand is what do these people expect when they put these people in power, right? I mean, I guess the free money is something that they all want to have. But I have to remind myself, you know, Dan and Amy, and I mean, you guys are probably, you're a little younger than I am. But if you go to the average, say, 30-year-old voter today, there hasn't been a really, there's been nothing really stressful, generally speaking, in their lives. But when we were 30, you know, I still had a grandfather that had been in World War II. I had another grandfather who could tell me about selling apples during the Depression. You know, we had Vietnam, we had Korea. We had things, we had the Bay of Pigs, we had stuff that was, you know, kind of unsettling. And now, if you were born since 1990, it's been straight up, baby. Everything's good. All the houses are bigger. Everybody's got two or three cars. Remember how smaller houses used to be?
Oh, yeah. We five had people, one bathroom. One
right. And some people had a TV, but it was only black and white.
Yep.
I mean, that's nice. Just all that's gone. These people have only had it easy. And I think that this is a general reflection of this new voter coming in thinking this is just how it's going to be.
Well, something else with that new voter and some of the old voters, too, it turns out. I mean, some from Comrade Sanders's generation, too. We're changing what we understand to be true about how the world works. We understand what we understand to be true about man's nature, what we understand to be true about how a free society, how an economy in a free society works. We used to believe that private enterprise grew economies. Now we believe government does.
Right, you're exactly right. We've been in this, you know, strap in your. And get ready for the universal basic income, because that's where we're going. We're going to pay people to stay home because, you know, there's going to be so much technological innovation. We're going to have so many people out of work that the government's still going to be humming along, and they're going to start paying people the universal basic income. And it's an old idea, and it's not really ever worked, but that's where we're going to go, and people are going to fall for it.
I wanted to get your reaction to a comment that was made by Joel Ross, who's has the Citadel Realty newsletter. He's one of the... In addition to you, one of the guys I look to for insights, he writes, the next several years are going to be very troubling for those folks who do believe that the private sector grows economies. Low-income workers are going to find themselves out of jobs and replaced by automation as the $15 minimum wage and pro-union policies kick in. The worst hurt will be blacks, who will see their opportunities for full-time jobs go away despite huge pressures on companies to hire them. Bond investors will suffer as rates rise and inflation sprouts. Innovation will once again be constrained as it was under Obama-Biden due to excessive regulation. Infrastructure projects will again become delayed as new government environmental regulation goes back to impeding any hope of getting projects underway quickly. And he suggests higher energy prices are in the offing, and all you're going to get in terms of policy response is the Fed buying more and more federal debt, as there's simply not the capacity in sovereign markets to accommodate the flood of debt, which is already at 108% of GDP. Does he have it about sussed out?
Yeah, I mean, I would have disagreed with probably only one or two of those things, but yeah, I agree 100%. That's, I mean, we can't continue to do this, and everybody thinks we can. And forget about saying that stupid saying about kicking the can down the road. I mean, at some point in time, when are we going to wake up from this nightmare? Because there isn't going to be, we're all waiting for what Bill Clinton got lucky to have, is that, you know, that new technological innovation coming around the corner and saving everybody. I mean, what's going to be the new technological innovation? What, electron transport, feed me up, Scotty, we're all going to Mars in 5 minutes. I mean, where is this going to come from? Because that's all we've been doing is printing money. This has been happening since 08, printing money. We haven't had any inflation pressures because the economy has been so poor, in the hopes that we're going to be rescued by some new technological innovation coming around the corner. And nobody knows what it is yet. We still can't find it. And, you know, there's a leak in the economic engine because what we're putting in is not coming out the exhaust. So we have, I mean, I think that there's big problems out there, systemic problems. But we're going to just continue to live in this la-la land because we've never really been pressed. No one's really ever had anything bad happen to them, per se. and the government's going to continue to print until, I don't know, when's enough enough? At 150% of GDP? I mean, this is absolutely insane. And this is where I can't stand about it, Dan and Amy, is now everybody's expecting things to go up even during bad news. It's like, oh, well, this is what the market does. Well, you know what? I've been doing this for 33 years. It doesn't. But right now, this is the world we're in, and everybody's got short-termism, right? Whatever happened yesterday is going to happen again today.
I wanted to get your reaction. Go back to Bitcoin for just a second, because I wanted to get whatever comments you have to say about Bitcoin spiking to, I think it's north of $41,000. 42 now. It seems to me, you know, trying to gather whether this is going to 300,000 or 3,000. I have no idea. But it seems to me that crypto's advantage is difficult to maintain because it's sort of an exotic vehicle. But if it ever goes mainstream, then you're going to have the formal banking sector operating in electronic reserve currencies, and that will eliminate its scarcity and thus its value.
100%. I mean, for all the stupid licenses that I have to be able to do this job, right? And there's a myriad of them. And one of the biggest ones is this money laundering. They're always worried about, you know, I have to take exams upon exams. About, you know, this Bitcoin is going to be the easiest way to launder money. So until, you know, once this does finally become mainstream, the government's going to move into that space, and it's over, in my mind. I understand the allure, but at the same time, once it does become, like you said, mainstream, the government's going to want to tax it, right? They're going to want to get involved, and they're going to. I mean, they're already starting to get involved. I know that they're starting to value your Bitcoin on your taxes and things like that. So this is going to be, I think, another watch it. If it goes to 300,000, it's going to be a great example of rememberpets.com. You know, that's what it feels like to me.
So, but I mean, if you're talking to you know, the Bitcoin investor, are you basically saying, you know, there is a window, but that window closes as soon as the formal banking system and the government and the combination of the two get involved in mainstreaming this? So that's the horizon.
Yeah. Does anybody think that the government's just going to let Bitcoin go on unchecked forever? I mean, you have to ask yourself that. No, the answer is no. It's not going to happen, especially when the government's more and more distressed and needs to find a place to, you know, they can't tax the people, you know, 15% on their houses in you know, South Chicago anymore. They're going to have to look to something. And it's going to be things like that. And that's where they're going to go. So I think that there's going to be a honeymoon period. We're probably in the middle of it right now. But there's also going to be a come to Jesus. And that's when the government really starts to weigh in.
He is Scott the Cow Guy Shalady, Fox Business regular and regular in the morning. Thanks, you too. Scott, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, you too. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Open mic! Open mic Friday! Call in now!
Yeah, it's Open Mic Friday. Taking your calls, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Your comments, concerns, critiques, compliments, conspiracy theories, we'll take it all, and there's a lot to cover. I know I've got something to contribute for discussion, and I know Amy does as well. So ladies first, Amy, please.
Well, thank you so much, Dan. Well, so many people have asked, you know, what did Pritzker say about reopening, you know, having indoor dining again, that thing we used to do, and having, you know, bowling, theaters, museums. And this is the question, because we didn't have that Thanksgiving surge, remember?
Yeah. So since we didn't have a Thanksgiving surge, and right now hospitalizations are down about 2,000 from the peak at the beginning of November, why not let people go back to just phase four right now?
I appreciate the question, and let me say that while we didn't see the kind of surge that we expected, you did see some hiccups, let's say, along the way, and even over the last week, where you saw you know, some of our positivity rates really start to climb again. So why not do it now? Because we're right now literally in the post-Christmas incubation period, and then post-New Year's Eve. We all know that
people
there were people
parties.
who chose to have a party or chose to get together with lots of other people, which we would have asked, we've asked them not to do, but people did it anyway. We want to make sure that we're keeping our infection rates as low as possible. And so we've scheduled essentially one incubation period after January 1, which is why January 15th is when, and by the way, these regions can move down not just to tier two, but wherever they belong in terms of what their infection rate is and what their hospitalization rates are.
Yeah. So, I'm sorry, so what's the answer about indoor dining at restaurants?
That we'll know January 15th.
Oh,
whether
well,
or not we
week,
can have our lives back.
Next week, I'll have an announcement.
Because somebody had a party, Dan. Mm-hmm.
And one other matter as it relates to Illinois and COVID. I am old enough to remember when that same Governor Jelly Belly said we were going to have winter sports in the spring. Where are we on that?
Well, I asked them, and I'm...
I mean...
I know.
Yeah, fall sports in the winter.
Yeah. Dr. Zike met yesterday with IHSA, and I heard that it didn't go well because she listened. I heard she listened from somebody that was at the meeting. They told me that she listened, but she's not... There's no end game. And that's what, you know, I asked Pritzker. You know, other states don't live like this. Other states around us, look around you. I have a map. Look around us. They all have sports. They even have wrestling. They're having football championships in Michigan with Gretchen Whitmer. She's allowing fall sports to finish, and then they've already started winter sports. And there's no end date. I said, just help us out.
Well, forget what other states are doing. You said this. We were going to have fall sports in the winter. It is now winter. Where are the fall sports? Right?
Right. And they're looking into it. That's
oh,
the
they're looking
line.
Great.
That is the bull jive answer he gave. Meanwhile, people are committing suicide.
Just a little bit of patience.
Yeah, well, the quarterback at Glenbrook North High School, Dylan Buckner, 34 on his ACT, 1460 on his SAT, killed himself. And he wanted to play sports, and he wanted to have a life. He wanted to go back to full-time high school, and he didn't have that. And now he's the 18th suicide since this began. And they don't realize, and I don't think Pritzker or Enzike care that they're killing our children. COVID's not killing our children, but suicide is, because kids are desperate and they just want their life back. And we're not going to get that anytime soon. And it's sick, and not everybody can move out of state. And if I could, I would. But I still feel sick for my players who can constantly email me, Dan, because they want sports and I can't help them. And I've tried and I don't know what else to do. I can't storm a Capitol. I can't storm a high school and reopen the doors and let the kids back in. And I'm sorry for crying, but I can't take it anymore. And I'm so sorry for Dylan and for the Glenbrook North High School community, because this didn't have to be this way. But we have leaders who aren't leading. They're just sitting there waiting for something. I don't know what. For this to be eradicated, for everyone to get vaccinated. It's not going to happen. We have to live our lives. We can't just exist. We have to live. And if Dylan Buckner's death doesn't wake up Pritzker and Enzike and all the rest of the Democratic people who don't care about them, I don't know what will. I'm sorry.
It's all right. In other matters in Illinois, I'll offer my contribution, then we'll take your calls on these topics and others. There's legislation pending in Springfield you may want to take judicial notice of in Illinois if you care about law enforcement, law and order. I know there's a dalliance between Democrat socialists and law and order happening right now for the purposes of blaming Republicans for what took place on Wednesday at the Capitol. House Bill 163 does the following. And remember, we're talking about supermajorities of Democrats, socialists in control of the House and the Senate, and a supersized Democrat socialist in the governor's mansion. Here's what House Bill 163 does. Eliminates qualified immunity for police officers, making them personally liable in civil suits. Eliminates officers' rights to collectively bargain. Creates a special class of public employee rights where only negotiations over wages and benefits would take place. No contractual language regarding discipline and discharge procedures for police officers. Allows officers to be disciplined based on anonymous and unsubstantiated or unverifiable claims, complaints, I should say. Disciplined based on anonymous and unsubstantiated or unverifiable complaints. mandates that unverified complaints be kept with no time limit, no removal, and no limits on permanent record unverified. Substantially increases both initial and ongoing training requirements, but does not provide any funding for increased costs and no assurances that the courses will even be offered. Mandates the use of body cameras by all departments for every officer, but does not include money to pay for the cameras. You know, unfunded mandates from the state to the localities, even as the states are always bitching about unfunded mandates from the feds onto the states. So that's House Bill 163. Your Democrat socialists who are pro-law enforcement, the law and order crowd, your Democrat socialists. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Mike in Bridgeview, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning, Dan. How are you?
Hello.
Hey, a quick question for you. Just curious, why does big tech support government so much when government's the first ones to regulate them?
Well, thanks for the call, Mike. I would say that big tech believes that they can essentially agency capture government, generally speaking. I think, number one, it's sort of interesting, the conversation we had earlier in the show with Stephen Levy, who wrote the book about Facebook. We were talking about it. And he talked about how, you know, the big tech oligarchs have to keep the socialist apparatchiks that run the boards content. And remember who staffs these companies. It's a left culture. I mean, just remember the postmortem on the 2016 election at Google when everybody, including the executive team, was, you know, weeping about Trump's victory. So you have a certain mentality. So there's a belief in government, mostly in terms of an instrument to impose their will on the public, both for their interests as well as their ideological worldview. And so I think, yeah, government can be a nuisance when it's Elizabeth Warren talking about breaking up Apple, or when it's some Republicans mainly talking about limiting Section 230 protections. But, generally speaking, these are people who believe that government is an instrument for good, just as they are an instrument for good. And if they can control both, direct both, all the better, the multiplier effect. John on the south side.
Hey, Dan, good morning, Dan and Amy. Amy, you really had me going this morning with that, and I feel so sorry for that kid's family, and I could feel your pain in that. However, my comment to you, Dan, is you're talking about the shooting of that young lady at the Capitol building and the use of force of police. The Capitol Hill police may have a different use of force when it comes to shootings, whereas if somebody steps over a velvet rope to take a selfie with a picture, you know you don't shoot them. However, if the Senate or the House is in chambers and somebody's coming in through a window and creating damage, maybe they have the right to shoot them. I don't know their use of force model. And the reasonable standard of it is always the reasonable man. That she wasn't a reasonable person, and they weren't being reasonable people climbing through the window. And you said the other people, the police had their guns in their hands. You and I and everybody knows you don't pull your gun out unless you're ready to use it. So maybe the other people, the other police had that right to use it, but chose not to. Amy, again, I feel your pain, and I can appreciate that you can show all your listeners how you feel and that you feel comfortable enough with us. And we're behind you all the way. And you guys have a great weekend.
All right, thanks, John. Yes.
It just makes me mad, too, because Pritzker's family doesn't even live here. That's how bad this state stinks. And his daughter gets to do what she loves. And he's taken away travel sports, too. And you need to put even salt in the wound. He couldn't hurt us anymore. And he doesn't have to live our experience because he's got the money and the means to get his daughter out of here so she could do her horse jumping or whatever that is.
Just,
I don't fault her for it, you know.
Tim in Pleasant Prairie. Hey, Tim. Tim in Pleasant Prairie. Going once, going twice. Okay. Rich in Indian Head Park.
Yes, good morning, Dan and Amy. Amy, I feel your passion for these kids. They really want to get back to school, and they're being held back. But on another subject, the shooting of this woman in the Capitol building, I don't think it was justified. I mean, she was in the window pane. Yeah, she was going in, but she wasn't in the building itself. And I think they could have held off a little bit longer before they used the force that they did. But the other thing that I want to comment on is everybody is blaming the president for this incident. I look at it like this. Early on, when there was hundreds of people that said there was fraud in the elections, why didn't they have a committee from the Democrats, Republicans, and judges to sit down and look at all of this? And if they found that there was no fraud and that it wouldn't have changed the election in any way, then I believe that the American people would have accepted all of the results and we wouldn't have had all of this chaos that went on Wednesday.
Thanks for the call, Rich. Steve on the south side.
Hey, good morning, guys. Amy, you said that I feel for you, number one. Let me be clear about that. But you said that COVID killed these kids. COVID did not kill these kids. The lockdown did.
The lockdown. Five kids died from COVID, 18 from suicide.
Under 20.
Right. So let's be clear. It's not the COVID that's killing these children. It's the lockdowns. And there are ultimately, there's one person that's responsible for yay or nay on these lockdowns, and we know who that is.
Yep.
Okay? So as far as I'm concerned, that's who's responsible for these kids' deaths. At least 18 of them. All right? That's number one. Number two, the lockdowns are driven off these tests. Okay? What do they do differently if you get tested and you test positive versus testing negative? Do they do anything different in your treatment? So my question is, what's the benefit of getting tested? Are we bringing this upon ourselves? If you get sick, you go to the doctor. Right. If you can't breathe, you go to the hospital. Does a positive or negative test result change any of that?
Okay, thanks for the call, Steve.
Well, they're just encouraging everybody to get tested. Just go get tested. Well, why? I'm not sick. Why do I have to go get tested? But people do.
Understand. Boy, one other thing, too. Did you see the story? This story of an allegedly healthy doctor, age 56 years old, in Miami, who died days after getting the Pfizer COVID vaccine. And there's questions about whether or not his death may have been vaccination related. I say that not to suggest that the vaccines are dangerous, not to suggest people don't get the vaccines, but I just suggest that this is the way we cover COVID cases and COVID deaths, ones that are unexplained or ones that are dubious. So should we cover assertions that there may be a vaccination-related death the same way to whip hysteria? Because isn't that the model that the media has provided for us? Will and Skokie.
Hey, how you doing? Okay, we got protesters going against Congress. We have protesters in the various states and cities and all this other stuff. And it all, regardless of right or left, it's all because the people in general don't feel they're being represented. The people who run the government, in actuality, are the middle-level bureaucrats. Think of a company where you've got a CEO, and he's running the company, and he's giving orders, but he can't fire anybody. And all the people down below them just do what they want anyway, and inefficiency and stuff. That's basically what's happening, and that's what Trump ran into is, I mean, even though he accomplished a whole bunch of stuff, amazingly so, there was so much stuff within, quote, the swamp, unquote, that you know, he couldn't stop. And then the people in the legislature, they don't read these bills. They're written by staffs and lobbyists, and if they start doing their job instead of spending all their time trying to raise money for their party, maybe we'd have something different. Have a good bye-bye.
Thanks for the call, Will. Although, I mean, those state legislators, you didn't need to read too much to understand what Democrats were doing in those swing states with respect to remaking the rules surrounding voting. That didn't require much of a deep dig. It just required a little bit of courage to stand and a relatively short attention span to stand up against it. Didn't happen. Jeff and Dundee.
Oh, Dan and Amy, I wanted to compliment you on this, the way you handled the reporting of the this Trump rally, when everybody else's hair was on fire, calling for this impeachment and the 25th Amendment, you guys were just steady Eddie, and you did a good job. So, okay.
Thanks for the call, Jeff.
All right.
Appreciate that. Bob in Buffalo Grove.
Thanks for taking my call, Amy and Dan, and thanks for bringing some intelligence and sanity to the discussion this week. There's so much I could weigh in this week, but I sent you text messages and emails. However, let me offer this observation. The media is proclaiming there's no evidence of voter fraud, and you know I'm an engineer, and math is my foundation. But I'm waiting for someone to explain to me precisely how Biden got almost 25% more of the vote than Obama got in 12 and Hillary got in 2016. Where did these votes come from?
Thanks for the call, Bob. And close out the week, as we always try to do, Chuck in Delavan, Wisconsin.
Well, first I'm going to buy a lottery ticket because I got through on a first call. And the next thing is, I'm over here working. I burned up 15 pounds of welding rod over here, and I'm actually doing really well. I'm welding in a bucket from a scrapyard this time instead of one with cow poop and pig poop on it. So I'm doing really well in tall cotton. Amy, I love you. I feel your pain too, and thank you for letting me be part of your show. I'll be dancing tonight. They'll never take me alive. Have a nice weekend.
Okay, Chuck. You can't remove Chuck from the dance floor. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Listen to podcast of Dan and Amy from the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.